everybody. Welcome to Retronauts Pocket, episode 12. My name is Ray Barnholt, and joining me is Bob Mackey.
Hello.
And from our previous wrestling episode, Dave Rudden.
Hey.
And Henry Gilbert.
Hi.
And today we're talking about Quake. Not the Quake series, and not the seismic events that happen all throughout the world due to tectonic plates, but just the first Quake game released in 1996. And this has been requested by our backer on Kickstarter, Michael Nikolai. And not just him, but actually he wanted this for his wife, Kate.
Oh.
And he writes, I asked her what her favorite game was, and she said Quake. She used to play it a lot in high school in the computer lab, and I'm terrible at mouse and keyboard games, and I know next to nothing about the series aside from the fact that Trent Reznor did the soundtrack, and it was something you could walk into 7-Eleven and buy. And those are two things we will talk about about Quake. But yeah, first of all, anybody have any familiarity with playing the original Quake?
Oh yeah, I do. I mean, we had just gotten our first computer in summer of 96, which is when Quake came out, right? Was that June of 96 or something, or August?
Okay. Yeah.
And I had been buying PC Gamer years before that and just collecting the demo discs. And I believe one of the more infamous demo discs had Quake on it. It was like a Quake cover of PC Gamer. So I got that, and I installed it in our Pentium 133, and it ran as smooth as you would expect it to. It ran surprisingly well, but like looking at it now, the animation is a little choppy. But yeah, I played the living hell out of that first episode, as I imagine we all did if we never even bought the game.
Yeah, I'm sure it happened to a lot of people with Doom as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys, anything?
I was not much of a PC gamer. Well, I still am not, but I had friends, and my cool friends were always talking up all the violent shooters like Quake and Duke Nukem and Doom 2. And I would see Quake, I was like, yeah, this looks cool and stuff, but I think I'll just stick to Mario. I'm good.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. This is like the opposite of the wrestling episode where we're both kind of like, it didn't fall in my wheelhouse. It wasn't on many consoles, and it wasn't on the PlayStation, which was my console of choice back during that era.
I got Quake 2 for some reason.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Let's just jump right into the beginning of the story. And actually, the seed of Quake is actually before even Doom, because Quake was the name of John Carmack's D&D character. This giant, this guy who swings a giant hammer, and that was apparently, that was awesome. Part of the early id culture back then.
I love that. I do love old id. I need to finish that book, but I started reading that book, The Masters of Doom.
Right.
About the history of id and I like that they're just the biggest nerds in the world, they were awesome at making games, and they were unapologetic with how big a nerds they were.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, they started out making like Commander Keen, those games for PC, and actually their Quake surfaced in the Commander Keen game. Actually, not really. It was like a text page ad that you could find somewhere, I think, after you exit the game or something like that. And it reads, as our follow-up to the Commander Keen trilogy, id Software is working on The Fight for Justice, a completely new approach to fantasy gaming. You start not as a weakling with no food. You start as Quake, the strongest, most dangerous person on the continent. You start off with a hammer of thunderbolts, a ring of regeneration, and a transdimensional artifact. Here the fun begins. You fight for Justice, proper noun, a secret organization devoted to vanquishing evil from the land. This is role-playing excitement. And you don't chunk around the screen.
I hate when you chunk around the screen.
I know. The Fight for Justice contains fully animated scrolling backgrounds. All the people you meet have their own lives, personalities, and objectives. A 256-color VGA version will be available, and the depth of play will be intense. No more whack-whack, here's some gold. There will be interesting puzzles, and decisions won't be yes, no, but complex correlations of people and events. The Fight for Justice will be the finest PC game yet.
Wow. That sounds like the future of PC game. Like, I think games are still trying to be what that game said it is.
Yeah.
I also would say that that's just a sign of id's, like, their concept and writing has not improved much since that
No,
time.
They're pretty much still kids, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't some of them literally teenagers at that point?
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm not sure who wrote that. It might have been, like, Tom Hall or somebody. But, yeah, I mean, that character who then became sort of this meme around their group and just decided to try and make a game out of it. But that didn't work out. Quake as we know it just became a straightforward kill 'em all in hell sort of FPS like Doom was, which is funny because it sounds a bit like how Rage turned out as well, because I remember a lot of hype about that game and how that was going to be a big RPG type game with all this great stuff in it, but it was still basically an FPS at the end of the day, although with, you know, like this bolted on quest structure.
And mega textures.
Yeah, right, exactly. Which is related to Quake, but that's later. But like, I wonder if that's such a bad thing, really, because, like, if you think about it, id was sort of honing their craft with FPS games, and, like, to make Quake in a game that, in a style that they were familiar with in the first place, I mean, who wouldn't just want the next id game anyway? Mm-hmm. And for it to be an FPS was, you know, probably acceptable.
Yeah, that's how I feel about games now, that I think not every game has to have an awesome story or has to be a movie.
Yes.
Or has to...
Or real living characters everywhere at all times.
Yeah, maybe if you're just really good at making FPSs, you just do another one of those and it's also really good.
Yeah. Like, yeah. The end style of Quake would be kind of this fantasy plus magic plus technology bent, and it was largely inspired by Lovecraft, as I recall, and it doesn't really look like that when you first see it, but I mean, a lot of the creature design at least was sort of had that sort of, you know, from the mouths of hell sort of look to them. But really, it's just you as this soldier guy going around shooting guys.
There's a weird progression to the levels I was reading in the Wikipedia article, mm-hmm. or something that I didn't realize. Like, the first level of every episode is the military installation, and the rest are, like, you going over to that weird dimension.
Right, yeah.
I never really understood that or realized that.
Yeah, a lot of going through portals, yeah. Because that first thing you see when you start the game is, like, the difficulty level portals.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And the hardest difficulty is hidden, so you have to know what you're doing to find a nightmare.
Yeah. You can find those in, like, the old Quake speedruns, the Quake Done Quick, like, you can see the guys go ahead and just run right straight for the hidden ultra difficulty. And, of course, Trent Reznor did the soundtrack from Nine Inch Nails, which I think was a pretty good coup, as like a match made in heaven.
He was at the height of his powers. This is right after the Downward Spiral happened.
Yeah.
Was that 94, I think it was, that album? I'm sorry, it was of the era.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like now, I got the feeling back then that it was just... Trent just wanted to do it because he liked him a lot. Like, he just really liked it. Now it would be a massive cross-media buy-in or something.
For sure.
They'd have to pay him millions of dollars to be like, Trent Reznor does the soundtrack. But this one was just Trent had free time or just liked id games so much he just wanted to do it.
That definitely comes through because I think unlike a lot of those other games that feature celebrities, it's like he didn't really put his face all over it. He didn't like try and design anything. It was just he made the music, that was it, and it was legit and people enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the nail gun ammo did have Nine Inch Nails logos on him, but that's about it as far as...
That's the least you can do.
Right, yeah. That's almost like a courtesy.
But talking about the soundtrack, it's not really available in the current versions online.
Oh, is that so?
At least I downloaded it from Steam, and the soundtrack wasn't there. It wasn't, they didn't figure out a way, because I think...
It was Redbook.
It was, just like with certain PC games at the time, like, you would be playing the game, but it would just be reading tracks off the CD in no particular order.
Yep.
Just, I guess, the order on the CD, and then it would just loop back to the beginning. I know Interstate 76 did that. So it wasn't really, like, it didn't really match the game. It just was sort of like, here's some background music for fun, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, wow. So this was, like, a completely... He made this soundtrack just for this game. Because when I picture mid to late 90s, like, metal, like, alternative rock stars putting their songs in games, it's literally just, let me take this hit and put it in your game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It was like 50 minutes of industrial music.
Okay.
Have fun. Play while you play Quake. Yeah. Maybe don't. I don't know. It's up to you.
So it wasn't Rob Zombie's Dracula appearing in a half dozen 90s games.
Yeah. I mean, and I was never into Nine Inch Nails, so I can't really faithfully comment on the music itself. I don't know if...
I'm not a fan, even though I liked alternative music at the time. But from what I hear, people enjoyed it, the soundtrack. At least the fans of it did. But I imagine that they would have to license it or something. There's some deal that is why it's not available in the digital versions now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they could figure out a way to have that music play while you're playing the game. I mean, this is 2013.
Yeah,
but...
for sure. I mean, Trent Reznor's kind of always been big on sort of that artist independence thing.
Yeah.
And I think, wasn't he one of the big proponents of, like, pay what you want for music?
I think he was one of the earlier ones. Radiohead made it popular first.
Yeah, true.
But Bethesda's got all the money in the world now. They could pay him.
Yeah, probably. That was that, and yeah, people liked it. It was a good match. So but the big thing about Quake, though, was that it used 3D environments, as opposed to Doom, which they use sprites for all sorts of characters and items, but, you know, the environments were 3D polygons. But now everything in Quake was made up of polygons and could be viewed from any angle, just as realistically as it could be. And that also meant that the levels themselves could be more elaborately designed just based on the advantages of the engine, so you could have more intricately designed buildings and structures and things, as opposed to, like, the Doom 2 Earth levels, which are just, like, these giant boxes that are supposed to look like apartments or whatever. It doesn't work out at all. So that was really the big thing about Quake, the big eye-catching thing about it. And then they sort of brought that on into, like, Quake 2 and Quake 3, too, where it was like, oh, now these things could be more curved. Look at these curves. We make these arches.
Playing the original Quake yesterday, I noticed that they're the same sort of enthusiasm you see from programs that are like, we can finally make 3D levels. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a weird comparison, but it reminded me of Mario 64. Mm. Just like all the ramps and platforming and portals. Like, you basically jump into a painting to select a level. Maybe that's the main reason, but a lot of the Quake levels reminded me of like sort of the Bowser stages where you're going up these like circular ramps and you're jumping like across lava and stuff that. So there's a lot of platforming in this game, and it makes me sad that like the modern FPS is just like a hallway. There's no like crazy like challenges or ramps or anything like that.
Because a lot of people diss Quake for being the start of the brown shooter.
Yeah, that's
right. And now that sort of led to everything else just being like, oh, brown and drab and lots of violence and everything. But, you know, cheer up. Now FPSs are gray and orange or blue. So, hey, we move forward somehow. I don't think you can really scapegoat Quake necessarily, but, I mean, it's true. It is pretty brown.
It's a very brown game.
It is very brown. I don't know if that was a Lovecraftian thing or not, but nevertheless.
I mean, it's a good count. Like, at the time, what was, like, the prevailing color? Like, Doom was just red. Just, like, red everywhere. And Duke Nukem, I feel like it was, like, blues and greens. So, I think it was a more unique color palette back then. Like, not everyone else was copying them.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not really something that brings out the luster of the graphics so much. I mean, again, with these more elaborate structures and things. Greater level design.
Yeah. But then again, it wasn't set in Afghanistan, so they didn't
True. Yeah. True enough. But yeah, to go back to like the release of Quake, I mean, there was a lot of hype behind it, and if you do read Masters of Doom, there's a point where just John Romero was just shooting his mouth off before it was even released and just like, getting people riled up over nothing, and how the rest of the id guys were like, God, should we do something about this guy or what? But I mean, you read about that a lot in that book as well, where it's just like John Romero was just, you know, he was a bit too enthusiastic.
At least it paid off with this, unlike, was it Daikatana?
Oh, my God, yeah.
He made us all his bitch.
Eventually, id uploaded it on the internet kind of discreetly, much like they did with Doom, the first shareware episode, and once people found out, it was, again, just another big firestorm, just like Doom was, for good reason. And I remember trying to download what was probably a 10 meg zip file over, I think, 28.8k modems, and just like, it was in the evening, I'm just like, oh God, please don't stop at 99 or something. Please just go all the way. And so, and then of course it barely ran on my PC because I had an older one than you did, Bob, so I didn't really.
So not quite 133?
No, I don't think so. So I couldn't quite enjoy it to its fullest extent. And then, of course, there is that 7-Eleven thing. And where this all starts is the fact that, you know, shareware games were being sold either directly from the manufacturer, or a lot of them were at, like, these weird third-party racks that you could find at, like, the bookstore or the grocery store even. It's just, like, these $5 shareware discs that they were probably not really legally copied, probably, but, you know, they looked official enough. So that was, like, the norm for quite a while, but then id decided to just, like, class things up a bit and make these official Quake shareware CDs to anyone who would accept them, basically. And that meant all the same sorts of music, book, game stores, and then eventually 7-Eleven. And that was a program initiated by Mike Wilson, who was then id's marketing and distribution lead, and then went on to start God Games and Gamecock. He's also a bit of a crazy guy.
Boy, is everybody at id crazy except for, like, Carmack?
Well, he's crazy in a different way, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, in a quieter way.
That's true.
More of a savanty way.
Everyone else is just a boisterous jerk, it seems.
That's not true. I mean, there's the guys you don't hear about as much, like Adrian Carmack. I mean, Tom Hull seems like a good guy.
That's true.
Here's some excerpts from the press release about this Quake shareware CD. Gamers can pick up the low-cost shareware at computer stores, music outlets, and for the first time ever, convenience mart 7-Eleven. id's agreement with Southland Corp's chain of 7-Eleven stores calls for the stocking of Quake shareware in an estimated 60% of the 5,100 7-Eleven stores nationwide. Mm. Here's a quote from Mike Wilson. The demand for Quake has been incredible, and we have had a record-breaking number of pre-orders for the game from both traditional retailers and uncharted alternative outlets like 7-Eleven. Convenience marts like 7-Eleven offer a whole new distribution channel for us, and since the Quake shareware was white-hot and priced right, it made perfect sense. Here's actually what I wanted to highlight. 7-Eleven is obviously a forward-thinking company and was the first convenience mart to step up and take advantage of this opportunity. They could potentially be our biggest customer.
They really beat out AMPM.
Yeah, I know, right? Jeez, what a coup. The retail launch of Quake marks the first time that it has distributed their own title under the id label, so that's something as well. And the shareware version of Quake with the full version encrypted on the CD-ROM will be available for under $10. So after purchasing the CD-ROM, you can call id to get a customer-specific code. So I guess that's basically how they did it. But customers can also purchase full version for $45 plus shipping and handling. So I think that sort of undercut the usual like $50 retail norm for most games out there. So.
The one retail norm, I think that might be the first press release that ever had record-breaking pre-orders listed in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Which now seems to be broken every holiday season or whatever.
It broke the, break the record every day. I think it was about 6 years ago or something that 7-Eleven tried to get back into the game market, and they would be selling they pre-ordered for Madden and Call of Duty,
Halo 3, things Halo like 3, that. Yeah. I remember
they would always get busted for breaking Street Date though, because
they always better.
Yeah, because it's like put it out with the milk. Who cares?
Yeah, they don't have anything else there that they get, or like okay, it arrived. I guess it's on sale. Like that's just how it works. Yeah. At 7-Eleven.
This Tiger Woods will spoil if you leave it out for too long. So let's put it on.
You cannot properly train those people for that sort of thing, I'm sure.
What do they care?
It's exactly.
They got to heat up taquitos.
Yes. So I don't know if we want to talk about the actual game itself. Bob, I know you downloaded it on Steam and you were playing it a bit before you
I mean, I'm just sort of, I mean, it's unfair to compare it to the modern FPS, but a few things I noticed were how fast the game is. Yes. I mean, I guess always run, you know, having your character always run is like the default option, but you zoom. I don't know. I don't know how fast they clocked that guy, but it feels like he's running like 40 miles an hour.
Yeah,
he can stop on a dime.
They really pumped it up after Doom, which became so much known for zooming around and shooting guys as fast as possible.
Yeah,
and but you still had to like hold the run key or whatever.
So, yeah, but it's extremely fast. And one thing I like that I noticed, there's no reloading of weapons, which is I guess it's sort of in modern games there's cover, so there's a chance to reload. In Doom, you're just barreling straight at everything. And in a way, it's kind of hard to manage because there's nothing really to hide behind. You sort of have to, like, do a tactical retreat if something's after you and then figure out how to approach it from there. But I sort of I want to see a modern FPS go that fast because I feel like the modern FPS experience is such a slog. Even something like Borderlands, which is built to be, like, speedy and fun, it's a lot of, like, walking across the desert slowly.
Yeah, and even, like, Serious Sam, which is probably, like, closest, is still not quite as fast, I would say.
Right.
Unless you really want to set it up that way, but yeah.
I remember what was that game? Nexwiz or Nexus? Or
Nexwiz.
Nexwiz,
yes.
Yeah, that the THQ published, like, it was pushing itself. It was like, this is the next generation of Quake. Like, this is, like, super fast, bouncing around, zapping people. Like,
I think you can still see games like that. I think maybe Hard Reset is a little bit like that.
Hmm.
And they're still making Painkiller games, aren't they?
I think so.
So there's those as well. So yeah, very speedy.
And lots of little environmental things that were not part of games, not part of FPSs before this. Like, you'll go into a room in the first stage, and you pick up the nail gun, and the lights go out, and there's a monster in. And once you kill the monster, the lights go back on, and they give you more ammo. Mm-hmm. So like lots of little scripting things like that really improved like what that FPS world could be. And one thing I noticed, I was playing it when my girlfriend is in the room, and she's like, "What's the story to this game?" And I'm like, "I don't know."
Right.
And I go through the options. I'm like, they don't even tell you the story in the game itself. So I was like, "Look it up on Wikipedia." Yeah. And she scrolls down. She's like, "This is too much." Like, after she gets to the first paragraph, it's like the story is like insanely complicated. For we're dropping you into this world, kill everything that moves. Right.
Come back and tell her it's about you start as Quake, the strongest, most dangerous person. You know what is? You know what another nice Mario touch was about that game that I like?
What's that?
The flying lava bits.
Like, so much of that game is like, I feel like, wasn't id trying to port Mario to the PC at some point? Wasn't that one of their projects?
Did,
I feel like Mario had some influence on this game, even though it predated Mario 64.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt, yeah. Yeah, we should do an episode about that Mario 3 demo from
I only recall the original Quake and as just the thing that my friends would, if they saw me playing GoldenEye, like some of them would say, like, this is cool and stuff, but it's not Quake. and they were right. Like, it wasn't. Like, they aren't the same. Like, I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. I think GoldenEye has aged probably a lot worse than Quake has at this point.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, one thing about Quake I noticed is that mouse look, you have to hold in a button to do it. It's not just automatic as you move your mouse. So it's like, I have to hold a button to like control my head as I look around. It's not just like,
looking up compared to Doom, like that was a step forward.
Yeah,
true.
But I'm pretty sure the bullets still track the enemy regardless of where they are in front of you, at least vertically.
Yeah.
So
I remember not finishing Quake.
I never finished it.
Yeah, I think I warped around a bit and just went to like the final level and the giant boss who moves a bit too stiffly and things like that.
Yeah.
I did remember finally, you know, getting the full version at some point and playing through it, but I don't remember a whole lot. It was enjoyable to a degree. I think actually I was more hyped for Quake 2 just because those graphics seem so much more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could actually see the guy's hand holding the gun. that sticks out in my mind.
Like, not to be crude, but the way the guns look in Quake, like from your character's perspective, is just really ridiculous. Like the rocket launcher looks like an iron penis that's being sticking out in front of your body. It's really
right.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it's still centered in the middle of the screen.
Yeah,
it's still not quite as realistic as having it off to the side a bit. Yeah, and yeah, sure, everything is made of 3D and polygons, but not a lot of polygons.
No,
not a lot, and they still move a bit too stiffly.
Yeah,
not fluid animation.
I don't know the secret of animating characters, but I think it's just all keyframes. There's no like in between frames being rendered, just to sort of save the processor power. So it's all kind of stuttery animation.
You mean in Quake
One? Yeah,
yeah, it was probably There's evidence of just it being keyframed.
But
I guess that is that does save on resources in some degree.
It's weird what happened to Quake was such a big deal and it didn't have much like staying power. The franchise, they just kind of let it after there's Quake Arena and like Quake Wars or whatever it was, and it just kind of went fallow.
Yeah. So I was going to talk about the legacy of Quake a bit, and I think the biggest thing was not so much, you know, what it did for the genre, essentially, because Doom already made that huge impact.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't, you couldn't really aspire to top it unless you did perhaps add all this RPG stuff, then maybe you could. But Quake did take advantage of something that Doom did not natively, and that was TCP/IP multiplayer over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that made it much more user-friendly to set up and play with someone long distance. However, the very first release of Quake was still kind of optimized for local play, so there was a big latency issue if you did try and finagle it to go over the internet. That was fixed by this add-on program called Quake World that basically turned Quake into a better internet-optimized client. And that was it, really. I mean, that really just dumped the fuel on the fire of internet gaming as we know it, because you had so much greater flexibility to find matches and find people to play and stuff. And you could download everybody's custom maps as you were loading levels and things like that, all those sorts of things that people made for the game. And then it added the server browser itself called Quake Spy, which became GameSpy.
Oh, wow.
Which is unrelated to the former gaming coverage outlet, or
it was at first, but very quickly not.
They had the same logo, but that was kind of it.
Yeah.
I guess Ziff owns that name now, don't they?
Yeah.
I suppose so. Anyway, that's probably.
I believe
that.
There still is the separate internet company
that still exists. That
still provides it. Yeah, they still provide that framework. So that was the big thing for Quake. I mean, if we want to talk about impacts, like that whole internet TCP/IP thing was pretty much the big thing.
Yeah, I remember my local LAN center for playing. They just had a bunch of PCs set up. It was, I bet everybody had a LAN center. Their LAN centers were like this, where they were just a hole in the wall at a strip mall that was just, they bought the cheapest desks they could and just turned on, they had fluorescent lights, and like, just play, give me money, go play.
Yeah.
The mine, they had a very weird, at the entrance, they had up like this, you know, cork board where you could put up, hey, play this game with me or stuff like that. But in the center of it was a sign that was like, welcome to America, speak English. And it was a list of like rules, that like hyper conservative rules about what you should do when you come to America and how awesome America is. It was crazy. It was
There's a hot dog shop in Berkeley like that.
Yes, yeah.
Just like, where's this coming from? I just want a hot dog.
In Berkeley?
Yeah. Well, not don't you've come to America, start speaking English, but it's a very, what's it, objectivist.
Yeah,
Ayn Rand at that place.
Oh.
It's about the slaves and workers. And
I see.
But I like their hot dogs.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Hate makes a good hot dog.
Well, next time you're in town, anybody.
Yeah.
Quake also begat the first Team Fortress, which was then just a little modest mod for that. And they also, I mean, that was another impact, is that it brought up this whole new mod community. I mean, certainly Doom had tons of different mods and total conversions and all those things. But I think with Quake, there seemed to be a few more that broke the rules, so to speak. Like, there was Quake Rally, which was basically just like a racing game.
Oh, yeah,
They turned the whole game into a racing game, basically, and I had fun with that. But the Team Fortress and things of that nature was pretty much like the highlights of the Quake mod community. I don't know, maybe it was not as super prolific as it was in Doom, just maybe because of like the complexity of added polygons and people, you know, maybe it's easier to draw sprites than it would be to model a whole new character from the ground up. But there were still plenty of mods, and in fact, Half-Life started as a Quake 1 engine game before it was a Quake 2 engine game, and then Valve still overhauled Quake 1 and added all the stuff that they wanted to add to it, like all the different lighting and whatnot. And I think that's the one that had the bearded dwarf, Gordon Freeman.
I remember that, yeah.
You can find those pictures online. I can't remember if it was actually the Quake 1 engine or not. But in terms of mods, like Half-Life then became the one to sort of inherit the mod throne, because then we had Team Fortress move over to Half-Life, and that basically, you know, became the Valve's new thing, and so many other things, like Counter-Strike as well. So it's interesting in that sense. For Quake 2, that was not actually a Quake game at first. I think they were just calling it that in a code name sense, and then eventually, I guess, the pressure mounted, and it's like, let's call it Quake 2 after all, whatever. Mm. And I guess because there was a bigger focus on sci-fi stuff, that's because it was not Quake at first. I mean, it had more of a plot this time. This was the stuff about the Strog, I believe the enemy force is called. And you have environments that are not so brown, but definitely a bit more metallic, and you're fighting more cybernetic things as opposed to just, you know, creatures, hellish creatures. But like I said before, that was the one I was more hyped for, and eventually I got like the PS1 version, which was not as great as the PC game, but it was respectable as a port. And I mean, there was also the first two Quake games were on N64 as well. And I think there was a Saturn version of Quake 1 that did not come to fruition. I think it did.
Well, I'm surprised I missed it on N64, because I played Doom 64.
Yeah.
Just because I was so bereft. Like, there were so few N64 games to play a lot of the time that you just play whatever you could find during those breaks in between Nintendo releases. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised I missed that game.
I remember mixing it up with, I think it was Hexen? Like, just the N64, like first-person shooters that weren't Doom. Yeah. Like, they were all sort of just blended together for me.
Hexen was pretty ugly on the N64.
Yeah. I liked it, though. We should do an episode about that sometime, maybe.
I played so many. Yeah, I just had a history of PC game, big PC franchises, finally playing them when they came to a console like that. I didn't play. I played the first Diablo on PlayStation. That's how I experienced it. Same with Descent. I played that on the PlayStation as well.
Hmm. Yeah. So yeah, more of the legacy. Like we have Quake 3, which flushed away any sort of mythology whatsoever to focus on basically being like this deathmatch platform, which is kind of odd when you think id might move on to being a maker of bigger and better games, but instead they decide to kind of scale down or scale sideways and make this multiplayer-focused game.
Was this when Unreal Tournament was taking off? Were they trying to catch fire? Or?
No, they were like parallel.
Before that, okay, yeah. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I mean, there was that great Unreal versus Quake rivalry because of this. Like, you chose your side. Did you like Unreal Tournament better or Quake 3?
Wow, and now that question is so dated now.
I think we all remember the Next Generation magazine cover. Yes, this is a real screenshot, and it's
oh my god,
that was for Unreal 1,
right?
Yeah, but yes,
this is a real screenshot.
Yeah. And there was also a notable Dreamcast port of Quake 3, because that was like one of their first entries into like of the SegaNet thing, where we're going to really push this whole internet connectivity thing with the Dreamcast, and so Quake 3 is going to be right there on day one, or at least month one, I don't remember. But yeah, that was there as well, and that was a pretty good port.
I think that was one of the few games that worked with the broadband adapter that you had to buy separately. It was like $60 or $70. It was super rare, and it was only I think the only other game was Phantasy Star, and I think you had to like do some weird hack to even get that to work.
Yeah, you're true. I mean, that's right. And then we have Quake 4, which I don't blame you if you don't remember.
I don't.
But that basically went way back to that Quake 2 mythology, so now it was a more story-driven game. And that was on PC, and then it was like a 360 launch game.
Yep. Hmm.
It wasn't directly developed by id, and maybe that's why it didn't have much staying power either way, besides the fact that Quake as a brand was sort of meh. But there was Quake 4, and then Enemy Territory Quake Wars, which was the birth of the Mega texture.
That's where it started, huh?
Damned if I can explain what that actually means anymore, but that was like a... I guess it's contemporary would be Team Fortress 2 in a way, because it was just like this squad-based shooter, and you would have your different roles on the team and go ahead and try and kill each other.
It was a little ahead of its time in that way, I guess, but...
Yeah.
It did not catch on.
I think it went through some development hell and did not really turn out that great in the end, so it got dinged for that. So in terms of games, that's like the basic Quake legacy. Of course, there was also Quake Con, which is probably the longest-lasting Quake thing.
Still going, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a good excuse for everybody to just be in a giant LAN party. You know?
Yeah, well, now they won't even have CarMax's like keynote anymore. Mm-hmm. So what will QuakeCon be next year?
That is a good question. Yeah.
It's very confusing. Like, just not that he would announce much, but he would just give a very like long, rambling speech. And at some point, like, Doom 4 is a thing. that would all you'd hear. That's all.
Yeah, I'm making some pretty good vertices on things. You know. Hey.
Yeah, I keep thinking like they went to all that trouble making id Tech 5, and like nothing has been made. Like few games have been released on it. I know the upcoming the Evil Within is an id Tech 5 game, but maybe a few other Bethesda games. Or I think that Wolfenstein thing is, but it's pretty rare. They should just they need to reboot that franchise as the Quake.
Right.
Yeah. It's weird how it has brought back all of their properties. They brought back Doom with Doom 3, Wolfenstein. I think this is the second time that they're bringing that.
There's one
back.
Raven made.
Yeah. And now, they still haven't redone Quake, really. Like, it was just linear for a couple years, and that was it.
And now that they're just, all the franchises are owned by Bethesda, I could just see them, like, someone in a boardroom somewhere going, like, hey, we haven't exploited this property yet. Let's get to it.
Yeah, I'd give it a few more years. Once the memory of those other ones dissipate.
Well, they had that idea with the online Quake, right? What was that one?
Quake Arena, which was just like a browser-based version of Quake 3. Yeah, I mean, that's... it was, I think, Carmack just trying to see how a game like that could run in a browser. And it worked out pretty well. I mean, it ran just like the game should. And I think in terms of that Unreal versus Quake 3 rivalry, like, Quake 3 was made to be really lean. Certainly, they worked hard on improving the graphics and making those arches. But they did try and make it as best optimized for the internet as possible and just make it super fast and, you know, everybody exploit all these different sorts of tricks and mods and different characters. And so that really grew and sustained for quite a while, along with Unreal, I suppose. But once they brought it to the browser, it's like, oh, now you can you can play whenever you want, basically, somewhat easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And was that the... Fatality's the guy from... He was Quake guy, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Fatal 1T?
Fatal 1T, yeah. He was... It's crazy to think he got so big now, like, without Twitch or any kind of streaming service, that he just got to be a big deal, like, more so just by reading about him. Like, there's this guy named Fatality. He's so good at Quake. Like, he's a millionaire off playing video games. Can you believe it? Like, now that's true for tons of people. But, well, not tons, but that's the lie League of Legends tells us.
Not everybody has their own snack mix. Gamer grub or whatnot. But yeah, that's about all I wanted to cover with Quake. This is Retronauts Pocket, so I'm allowed to be that short.
Ray, I have one thing to add that's important. Sorry to stretch this out, but Machinima. Quake is the first recorded use of Machinima.
That is true.
Which is like, the first time a movie was recorded within a game, like a narrative or something like that, however you want to define it. And I watched it online this morning, and I forget what it's called. It's like Ranger's Last Day or something Ranger. Hmm. You guys can look it up on your own. I'm sorry, I didn't write down the name. But it's basically it's just like the game Quake, and you're watching it. And the character is walking up to different enemies, and there's like little dialogue happening between them. But it's just sort of like displayed as console commands. So it's kind of the equivalent of a cave painting today compared to like Red versus Blue or whatever.
It sounds like Quake mixed with a text adventure.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, and then that was the first time Machinima happened, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was the train coming towards the camera.
Yeah, it's like, yes. Is this really happening?
I was going to say the
And then you
the
ran
nation.
Out of the room. Yeah, I think Quake was responsible for more things than just, you know, than we give it credit for. I mean, yes, it was just another FPS and it played a lot like Doom, but there were a lot of different things surrounding it that are worth mentioning. And, you know, I mean, it did continue on. It continued longer than Doom. I mean, there were four or five Quake games. Six if you count Team Arena. Hmm. But, yeah.
Someday there'll be a Doom 4, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, Doom 3 was basically based on, like, a upgraded Quake 3 engine.
Those are space demons, I think. Yeah. They need to return to, what, regular demons?
Just save it from hell.
Yeah.
Yes, that's all we need. All right. If you guys don't have anything else to add, let's go ahead and wind it down. That was Retronauts Pocket about Quake. And thanks again to Michael Nikolai. I hope it's okay. I hope your wife is satisfied. I mean, it sounded like she had a pretty good story about it. I mean, you don't even hear about many females playing a game like Quake so much. I mean, sure, mm-hmm. I'm sure there was. But, yeah, it's nice to hear. So, yeah, we're on Retronauts.com. We're on Twitter, Retronauts. We're on everything as Retronauts.
Twitch, Facebook,
yeah,
everything.
And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. Give us good ratings, because it helps, apparently. And, yeah, you guys, once again, Dave, Henry, plug some things once more.
On Twitter, at Fatal20. No, wait. Dave Rudden on Twitter. I host the Cheap Popcast on the Laser Time Network, and I write for Official Xbox Magazine and host the KOXM podcast.
Mm-hmm. And I'm H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. And I appear on the Cheap Popcast sometimes with Dave, but I also host the Cape Crisis, the comic book podcast on the Laser Time Network. And I write for GamesRadar.com and appear on their podcast, Radio Radar. So give that a listen.
And you can find me at Bob Servo on Twitter. And I also write regularly for US Gamer and Something Awful and all over the place. So just follow my Twitter if you want to read my stuff.
All right. I'm RDBAAA on Twitter. And we didn't talk about it much, but I did want to plug once more the book, Masters of Doom. I think everybody should read that. If we're going to talk about Doom or Quake, you should definitely read that book as well. It's great.
It's on Kindle.
Oh, cool.
I read it on there.
And there's bits about Quake in there, some really good insight. And, yeah, it's great stuff. So, yeah, thanks once again, everybody. And we'll see you next time on the show. Bye-bye.